I feel like we have already heard the voice of God many times this morning. Let us listen again. Will you pray with me? May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts hold one more piece of your word to us this day, God. The word you want to speak, the word we need to hear. For you are our rock and our salvation, our Redeemer. Amen. I went to a comedy club the other night. It's not something I often do. Rarely have I done that. But the son of a friend of mine, a young man I watched grow up, was competing in a stand-up comedy competition. So I went out of curiosity about who he had become as an adult, and so I could vote for him whether he was funny or not. The best comics that night were the ones who made fun of themselves. The ones who were gay or immigrants or overweight seemed to have a distinct advantage in terms of material for their routines. They entertained us by commenting smartly, ironically, on the ways they don't fit in, the mistakes they've made, the moments that they've been humiliated or embarrassed. And the audience laughed hardest when they told these stories, maybe out of sympathy or because we could identify with the comic's experience, maybe out of our own discomfort. And for the most part, humor seems like a pretty healthy way to deal with things that might otherwise shame or embarrass us. But we have all heard stories of comedians who are also deeply unhappy inside. Robin Williams, Dave Chappelle. Maybe you have known people who use humor as a shield against the self-doubt that they struggle with. Maybe you've done it yourself. Self-consciousness and regret for what we have done or about what we are, moments we have not lived up to our own hopes for ourselves, wrong decisions we've made. Regret lives someplace deep inside of us, usually a place we try very hard to keep hidden, invisible. And regret, Peter's regret, is what today's story from the Gospel of John is about. Mary set the scene for us. It's after Jesus' resurrection. The disciples are still a little off balance about how it is that the same Jesus who already died can keep appearing to them as if he's alive. Everything seemed to them sort of unpredictable, chaotic. The project that they had worked on for the past 3 years, that thing that they thought was going to change the world, is pretty clearly a failure. And so they've gone back to something that they know well, something that can give them some sense of familiarity and competence, fishing. So they fished all night, and they caught nothing. Can't even do this anymore, they must have been thinking. And then someone called to them from the shore, suggesting that they drop their nets on the other side of the boat, the same way Jesus had suggested the first time they met him. And just like that first time, when they followed this strange fishing wizard's advice, the fish came, hundreds of them. And this time, when it happened, something clicked for them. That shadowy figure on the beach, that man whose face was obscured by the sun's first light, that had to be Jesus. Peter was the first one who recognized him. He tore off that boat and he took off swimming toward the shore. However long that swim took, however glad he was to see Jesus, Peter had to have a growing sense of anxiety while he was in the water about what he would say when he climbed out onto the beach. Because the last story that this gospel told us about Peter before Jesus' death wasn't pretty. Peter was standing in a courtyard waiting with other bystanders to hear the news of what had happened to Jesus during his trial. He hovered near the rest of the crowd, trying to stay invisible, but also trying to casually overhear how they were going to sentence Jesus for the crimes that he'd been accused of. 3 times in that courtyard, someone asked Peter, "Aren't you one of his disciples? Don't you know him?" And 3 times, Peter answered as casually as he could, "Nope, never talked to that man." And just as he finished his stammering answer the 3rd time, a rooster crowed, reminding Peter painfully that just the night before, Jesus had predicted that Peter would deny him 3 times before the dawn of a new day. "I would never do that," Peter had said. "Yes, you will," Jesus had replied. So there on the beach a few weeks later, Peter had no choice but to face his own failure of friendship, that moment when he had lost his courage. When he staggered, dripping out of the water and onto the shore where Jesus was waiting for him, he had no idea what Jesus would say. I'm sure he was worried about whether this relationship had been broken irretrievably. Peter had watched Jesus forgive other people before, but maybe his offense was worse than all the others. What if he had betrayed his friend in a way that was just too big to forgive, too serious to deflect with a joke? What if, Peter must have been asking himself, what if the crack that he had caused in this relationship was so deep that it couldn't be glued back together? Everything about the way John tells this story holds an echo of that night of betrayal. For Peter and for us, John tells us that there was a charcoal fire burning on the beach as Jesus prepared breakfast. And that detail is meant to call up for us the memory of that night in the courtyard when Peter warmed his hands around a fire. In front of that fire, while Jesus was being interrogated, strangers asked Peter 3 times about whether he was Jesus' friend. In front of this fire, Jesus asks Peter 3 times, "Do you love me?" Twice, Peter answers Jesus, "Oh, yes, of course, I love you." But Jesus asks again. And the 3rd time, Peter answers with exasperation, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." This too reminds us of all that Jesus knew about Peter. This too reminds us of that other night when Jesus had known in advance that Peter's loyalty would fail when the crisis came. 3 times, Jesus gave Peter a chance to remember, to say out loud the truth, the only truth that could save him from being ground up by his regret. And Jesus' response to him, each time, "Feed my sheep, take my place in caring for the people I love." Those were the words of forgiveness. Those were the words that said to Peter, "Nothing you have done, nothing you have ever done has forfeited your place with me. I wonder what Peter would have done or said if someone else had confronted him about that night in the courtyard, or if Jesus had spoken to him with a voice of accusation. Even if Peter was self-conscious about his own wrongdoing, I'll bet that he was also ready to recite all the ways it was not his fault. He might have been ready to say to Jesus, "You left without telling us what was happening." Or, "The others ran away first. I was the last one to leave. What did you expect me to do?" he might have asked defensively if Jesus had given him the chance. Jesus didn't ignore what he and Peter both knew had happened. He didn't pretend that no break had appeared in their friendship. He didn't say, "Oh, it's okay," in a way that let Peter immediately off the hook. He asked Peter 3 times, "Do you love me?" He uncovered, brought out into plain sight Peter's 3-time denial of him in the courtyard. He knew there was forgiveness work, relationship rebuilding work still to be done. But Jesus also didn't pound Peter over the head with his failure, the way we are sometimes afraid that God might want to use our inadequacy to pound us into submission. That is just not God's way. I am convinced that the only way that God ever punishes us is by letting us face the consequences of our own actions, our own misdirected desires. When our defenses are gone, when we are ready and able to take responsibility for our own failures, our actions gone wrong, our desires run amok, then we can claim the forgiveness that is right there waiting for us. Only when we are able to unbury our regrets, when we allow them to come to the surface and teach us something, when they are freed from all those layers of defensiveness and explanation, projection and blame, sometimes blanketed by humor, only then can they be seen and forgiven and healed. Only then can we begin to live wholly, freely, fully. I heard a professor say once that on the first day of a class that he taught college freshmen, he often asked them, "What do you want to be able to say about your life when you are 80? And consistently, every year, the most popular answer was this: "I want to be able to say I have no regrets." Who gets to 80 without having any regrets? What kind of life have you lived if you can say that? Maybe we are afraid of living with regrets, or of taking risks that might cause us some regret, because we have mistakenly believed that we can or we should live our lives so that we will never need forgiveness. That we can self-improve so completely that we can repair our own flaws, or at least prevent them from appearing in public without makeup. But forgiveness, knowing we have been forgiven, is the only thing that can give us that beautiful quality of humility. The need for forgiveness, that pattern of falling down and standing up and falling down and standing up again, is what makes us human. It is the pattern of God's love, the grace that most clearly reminds us that we don't always earn what we have been given. Forgiveness. I have a friend who defines forgiveness as giving up hope for a better past. Forgiveness sees and acknowledges that every one of us, and life itself, is flawed and broken. Forgiveness knows that the past cannot be undone, and still the future is full of promise and hope. I sat at lunch a few days ago with a group that included two women who talked openly about the fact that each of them had worked as a prostitute. They could talk about it because they are different now, because the people at a place called Thistle Farms in Nashville, Tennessee, took them in and loved them without judgment, healed them into new life. There is a freedom, a liberation of heart and soul that comes when you can admit that you have been picked up off the ground where you were pretty much flat on your face. Do not be afraid, our God says to us. Do not be afraid of living with a past that cannot be changed or rewritten. Do not be paralyzed by the possibility of making a mistake. Do not be afraid to be a person who has been forgiven and who will need forgiveness again. Because there is plenty of grace for all of us. Amen.